Good morning, and welcome to Simply Space. It's Thursday, April 11th. On today's show, Innovation Rx reports on a $90 million project to make drugs in space, while the new U.S. Space Force strategy outlines criteria for commercial adoption. Plus, NASA unveils its new plan to tackle space junk, including the appointment of a director of space sustainability. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Space. We start off with a new startup called Varda Space that has raised $90 million to manufacture drugs in space. The company says microgravity allows for finer control over the crystallization process used to make active pharmaceutical ingredients. Here with more details is our space industry correspondent. So what exactly is Varda trying to achieve by making drugs in orbit?
Varda believes that the unique environment of microgravity will allow them to create drug ingredients with improved properties compared to those made on Earth. In space, crystals can form more uniformly and with fewer imperfections. This could lead to drug compounds that are more potent, stable, and bioavailable. Varda's spacecraft are designed to manufacture the drug ingredients on orbit and then return the payload safely back to Earth.
And how far along are they in demonstrating this capability? Have they successfully manufactured any drugs in space yet?
Just last month, Varda announced the results from their first manufacturing experiment on orbit. While they haven't revealed specifics, it seems the test went well, giving investors the confidence to put in another $90 million in this Series B round. That brings Varda's total funding to $145 million so far. The company is now preparing for its next mission, scheduled for this summer, which will likely aim to further prove out their drug manufacturing platform.
What kind of advantages could space-made drugs provide compared to traditional ones? Are there particular types of drugs Varda is focusing on?
One key advantage is that drugs made in microgravity could potentially be delivered in new ways. For example, some drugs that normally have to be given intravenously could potentially be reformulated as injectables if the space-made crystals are small and uniform enough. In terms of Varda's focus, they haven't disclosed which specific drugs they are working on. But any medication that relies on crystalline active ingredients could theoretically benefit from their approach.
This is certainly an intriguing application of the space environment. But there must be significant challenges to overcome in terms of cost and scale. Is this something that could plausibly be done commercially?
That's really the key question. Varda will have to prove that the benefits of space manufacturing justify the added complexity and expense. Sending up and operating spacecraft isn't cheap. But if it allows the creation of higher-value drugs, the economics could work out, especially for medications that are given in small doses. Varda's CEO has compared it to how semiconductor fabs are expensive to build but can be highly profitable. Still, the company will have to rack up a lot more successful missions before they can bring space-made drugs to market.
Thanks for the update on Varda's progress, David. Shifting gears to another development in the space industry, the U.S. Space Force has released its first-ever strategy for acquiring commercial space capabilities. The document outlines four key criteria that will guide the Space Force's decision-making when it comes to leveraging the private sector, but notably does not include any specific funding plans. For more on this, we're joined now by our Simply Space correspondent. So what exactly are the main points of this commercial acquisition strategy?
Well, David, this strategy really sets the foundation for how the Space Force intends to work with commercial space companies going forward. The four main criteria they will use to evaluate potential partnerships are enhancing the Space Force's capabilities, increasing competition and innovation in the space industry, providing cost savings for the government, and ensuring that commercial services are reliable and resilient. Essentially, they want to tap into cutting-edge private sector technologies and services in a way that augments the Space Force's existing assets and saves taxpayer dollars.
And what's the significance of the Space Force not including any funding specifics in this document? Is that unusual?
It's not totally unexpected, given that this is meant to be a high-level strategic vision rather than a detailed budget proposal. The actual funding for commercial capabilities will likely come through the Space Force's annual budget requests to Congress. That said, the lack of dollar figures attached to this strategy does leave some ambiguity around the scale and pace at which the Space Force will actually pursue these commercial partnerships. But the document does make clear that leveraging the private sector is a key priority going forward.
The commercial space industry has obviously been booming in recent years with the rise of companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin. How much is the Space Force already relying on private sector capabilities?
They're already utilizing commercial services in several key areas, particularly satellite communications, Earth observation, and space situational awareness. For example, the Space Force contracts with companies like SpaceX and ULA for rocket launches, and they buy communications bandwidth on commercial satellites to supplement their own networks. But this new strategy suggests they want to greatly expand and deepen those commercial partnerships in the coming years to keep pace with rapid private sector innovation and drive down costs.
Is there any concern that relying more heavily on commercial providers could compromise the Space Force's ability to perform critical national security missions?
That's certainly a key consideration, and the strategy does emphasize that commercial services must meet high standards of reliability and security. The Space Force will likely continue to maintain its own core capabilities that are deemed too sensitive to outsource. But there's a growing recognition that the private sector is innovating so rapidly, especially in areas like small satellites and reusable rockets, that the government can't afford to ignore those advancements. It's really about striking the right balance and ensuring seamless integration between government and commercial assets to create a more resilient space architecture overall.
All right, we'll have to see how this strategy translates into actual investments and partnerships in the years ahead. Thank you to our Simply Space correspondent for breaking this down for us. Speaking of space strategies, NASA is taking a new approach to tackling the growing problem of space junk in Earth's orbit. The agency unveiled its space sustainability strategy this week, which includes appointing a new director of space sustainability to oversee these efforts across NASA. With the rise of the commercial space industry and expanding space programs from other nations, low Earth orbit is becoming increasingly crowded with active and defunct satellites and rocket parts. For more on this, we're joined by our correspondent. So what exactly is NASA's plan to address this issue?
NASA's strategy has a few key components. First, they want to prioritize efficient ways to reduce uncertainties about orbital debris in low Earth orbit. This means investing in technology to better track and understand the risks posed by space junk. They also plan to develop policies that incentivize sustainable space operations for both NASA and the private sector. The goal is to treat low Earth orbit, the Moon, and other celestial bodies as precious environments that need to be protected, similar to how we think about sustainability on Earth.
And this issue of space junk has been a growing concern, right? Especially with the increased activity we're seeing in low Earth orbit.
Absolutely. NASA's Orbital Debris Program estimates there are over 25,000 pieces of space junk larger than 10 centimeters orbiting Earth, with around 500,000 smaller pieces. Even the International Space Station, orbiting about 250 miles up, faces daily risks from micrometeoroids and space debris. In 2021, a Russian anti-missile test actually created a large debris field that forced ISS astronauts to shelter in case of a collision. So this is a very real and pressing issue as space gets more crowded.
NASA's Deputy Administrator Pam Melroy called this a pivotal moment and said the time to act is now. What makes this such a critical juncture?
It's the rapid growth of activity in low Earth orbit. NASA points to the rise of satellite megaconstellations, more autonomous spacecraft, and plans for commercial space destinations as key drivers. While these developments offer a lot of potential benefits, they also create challenges in terms of crowding and debris. Several large satellites and rocket bodies have come crashing back to Earth in recent years, some planned and some not. Understanding and mitigating these risks is crucial for the long-term sustainability of the space environment and the safety of operations in orbit.
Do we have any sense of timeline for when this new strategy will be implemented? What are the next steps?
NASA just released this high-level strategy document, which lays out their key goals and approach. The next major step is appointing this new Director of Space Sustainability, who will lead the efforts to flesh out and implement these plans across the agency. I imagine we'll see this sustainability lens increasingly applied to NASA's ongoing work and future missions. Partnering with industry and international allies will also be key, since this is a global challenge. But the main message is that NASA is prioritizing this issue and putting real resources behind it, which is an important signal.
It certainly seems like a complex challenge that will require a lot of coordination and innovation to address. Thanks for breaking this down for us. Speaking of space innovation, SpaceX has launched another batch of Starlink satellites into orbit. The company sent 23 more of the internet beaming satellites to space on Wednesday. For more on this latest launch, we're joined now by our space correspondent. So what can you tell us about this Starlink mission?
This was another routine launch for SpaceX as they continue building out the Starlink constellation. The Falcon 9 rocket lifted off from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida on Wednesday, carrying 23 Starlink satellites. About 8.5 minutes after launch, the rocket's first stage returned to Earth and landed on a drone ship in the Atlantic Ocean. This allows SpaceX to reuse the booster, which helps keep launch costs down.
And the satellites were successfully deployed after the launch.
Yes, the 23 Starlink satellites were released into low Earth orbit about an hour after liftoff. They'll now use their onboard thrusters to raise their orbits and join the rest of the Starlink constellation, which already numbers over 4,000 satellites. SpaceX is building this network of satellites to provide high-speed, low-latency internet to users around the globe, even in remote areas that don't have good access with traditional internet infrastructure.
How frequently is SpaceX launching these Starlink missions now?
SpaceX is keeping up a very rapid launch cadence for Starlink. This was already their 15th Starlink mission just this year, and we're only in April. Last year, they launched a total of 61 Starlink missions. At this pace, they could exceed that number this year. Each launch adds more satellites and expands the coverage and capacity of the network.
And this comes just days after another notable SpaceX launch, right?
That's right. On Saturday, SpaceX launched the Bandwagon 1 mission, which was the company's first ever joint rideshare mission. That Falcon 9 carried 11 satellites into orbit for various customers. So it's been a busy week for SpaceX, with two successful launches deploying a total of 34 new satellites into orbit. And there's likely to be little slowdown, as SpaceX has many more Starlink and customer missions lined up for the coming months.
Fascinating stuff. Thanks for breaking this down for us. We'll be sure to keep an eye on SpaceX's progress as they continue the rapid expansion of the Starlink network. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Space. We'll see you back here tomorrow.